This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, looking at the whole of the New World Latin America version from the point of view of why doesn't it grow? This is an essay I recommend to everyone in The Economist magazine, London Observing. And what I learn is that the perception of Latin America being troubled by poverty, inequality, corruption is accurate, but a product of lack of growth or low growth or troubled growth for many decades, not one particular political opinion, not one particular administration or government, but many. And I learned that this low growth starts because, I mean, half the economies are informal economy with labor going into not productive, but pieces of the labor force are organized in such a fashion that they're independent of the growth metrics that we understand in the North Temperate Zone. So I go to the driver for this seems to be one word, protectionism. Professor, do you agree with that protectionism is the bane of growth in Latin America? Does Latin America see this in general? Is there now a movement to understand what the tariffs have done to the prospects of the young people?
John, protectionism is certainly one key factor in Latin America, although the degree to which it is seen in those terms in the region is probably still uneven. But among those who study the region and those in the region, the question of why Latin America's growth has been lagging and uneven has been a theme for more than a generation. There's talk about the failure to invest more within the region and thus low rates of productivity, talk about the persistent lack of infrastructure, not only transportation, but inefficient or expensive electricity and others, telecommunication, talk about the insufficiencies in education, especially technical education, talk about market distortions created by protectionism, but also by the uncompetitiveness of longstanding industries and labor regulations and unions. And I'll certainly talk about the impact of political uncertainties and, frankly, policies that are anti-market or just haven't made sense, and political uncertainty that, again, discourages investment. There's a whole series of things that continue to undercut Latin America's ability to progress, although you do see promising signs in different places. But right now, certainly, we are definitely on a down cycle, both in terms of the politics, as well as in terms of some of the broader forces, as we've seen from the effects of COVID-19 and Ukraine, which will take those existing legacy problems and probably make those crises even more acute.
The analysis from Europe, if I read it correctly, is that Latin America in general, we're talking about a vast region, lacks competitiveness, and the regulatory barriers, the tariffs, et cetera, protect monopolies, and monopolies are satisfied with rents. Let's go to Argentina, which is said to be the worst of the worst. Protectionism in the form of labor unions protecting the industries that they participate in because they have good contracts or good relations. And what this means is that there's a shortage of capital, foreign exchange capital, and the government subsidizes and subsidizes all industries. The peso's in decline or the peso's unstable. I'm just summarizing from how The Economist puts it. Now, we know politically it's weak in the region because of high inflation and because the government right now doesn't have an answer, except that it seems comfortable with the monopoly situation of its industries because labor is comfortable with that. Have I left out anything that bedevils Argentina? Because we both know that Buenos Aires was built to be a European capital, and the education, the people, the climate, the agriculture, everything suggests this is a booming economy, except it isn't.
What you point out is absolutely correct, John, that in Argentina, in Brazil, and in other places, there are all types of protectionism. And I would regard it as an attribute of the socioeconomic structure of the region, clientelism, and the way in which, for example, elites are able to capture the government in alliance with politicians, and thus those elites can get the governments to either protect their industries or reciprocally in those cases in which leftist governments have decided to impose state-owned industries, those industries have become uncompetitive for other reasons. On the labor side, as you also rightfully point out, labor unions, which have a very important political dimension in terms of the representation of worker rights and the concept of only, you know, pay the workers more so that magically everybody becomes more prosperous. That has meant very politically powerful labor unions in Argentina and elsewhere that, again, have made the prices of things very uncompetitive. But the prices of those who could be in the formal sector, because what has happened is that because it's so difficult across Latin America to start up businesses or to hire people, or so many rights for formal labor, that instead of getting more formal employment, what you do is you find a lot of informal employment. As you pointed out, about 50% of the total of Latin America is in the informal sector. In places like Peru, it's as high as 70%. Part of that is just because of the economic difficulties, but part of that is because it's just so unfeasible, it's so difficult to create formal sector employment with the wage requirements, with the labor unions, with the formal requirements of creating businesses that exist across the region.
R&D. The article mentions that there's a chronic underinvestment in R&D. An example, recently I spoke to a young woman reporter, science reporter, who writes a wonderful, expansive piece about the failure of Brazil to adequately invest in what is called INPI, which stands for the National Space Institution that builds the satellites and maintains the satellites to watch the Amazon. I learned that 20% of the fresh water of planet Earth in the solar system comes out of the Amazon system. Nothing's more important than watching the Amazon, especially with all the questions about deforestation. In any event, Brazil is chronically underfunded it, and it's getting worse, not better. And so we're actually talking about a computer that doesn't have parts anymore, and they're worried if it breaks, we won't be able to maintain contact and do our surveys. The more worrisome part is that the young people in Brazil who come to NP to be trained and to have careers cannot find jobs in Brazil and go overseas to Scotland or, in one instance, Texas, the young scientists. Now, Brazil is a good example of a competitive economy compared to Argentina or compared to Peru. But if it's underfunding what was a prize, I learned, Evan, early on in the space race, that Brazil had a space agency, was always bandied about as a success for Latin America, and now it's withering. Now, I don't know if this is a one-off or not, but it does suggest that the whole region does not take seriously these warnings that we're losing.
There are two dimensions of the issue of productivity and investment, John. On the government side, there is a tendency to reward the short term across a number of different governments to pay people to compensate them for their socioeconomic difficulties or protect them instead of actually using those investments, making the sacrifice of limited resources to create the conditions for long range growth. On the private industry side, you also have a problem of short term thinking that many governments, many industries, because they have political protection, because they recognize the political risk, want to essentially put their money in and get it out as quickly as possible. And so things that make sense when you believe in the long term, such as investing in R&D, don't get as much reward rather than structuring your spending in such a way is that you make some money and get it out quick and you hide it in an offshore account. Now, the comment that you make also points out that despite the relative uncompetitiveness of a country like Brazil, indeed, many of my colleagues often talk about the Brazil cost, the difficulty in starting up a business, the difficulty in the regulation of dealing with a business, the labor laws, But despite all of that, Brazil is a big country, 200 million people, half of the economy of South America. And it's also a very diverse economy. They have a great biotech sector. They've made progress in green technologies. They have a space program. They have a some nuclear power, et cetera. And so IMPE, as you refer to, is kind of one of those examples of triumph. And yet IMPE in many ways also points out, you know, that not only do you have the progress, which was pushed by the government as well as the initiative of well-educated Brazilians, but also some of the shortcomings of the way IMPE has been funded over the years, and thus the lack of funding for some important things like the satellite program that you allude to.
Finally, Mexico. Not finally, but in Mexico, and the articles pointed to as being at least two countries. North of Mexico, which is integrated into North American commerce and development and investment, and then Central and South America, which are said to resemble South America. That doesn't sound like flattery either, Evan. Sounds like the Northern Triangle, which is deeply troubled. And the question here is, what is to be done? And the question immediately is answered by the London observers, as we have AMLO, a popular president, who is nationalizing energy and making investment extremely nervous because his decisions seem arbitrary. So is Mexico also falling away from productivity? Because the north of Mexico is not.
As you point out, John, Mexico is moving in a worrisome direction and probably the wrong direction. And this is a symptom of what happens elsewhere in the region, that faced with inequality and frustrations, populist leaders who are elected that move the country in anti-market directions, which cause capital flight and other damage. And so since AMLO is coming in, although he claims to want to make the south of Mexico as prosperous as the north, which, as you pointed out, its prosperity was in large part because the maquiladora sector, that manufacturing base, was integrated into U.S. Supply chains, first under NAFTA, replaced by USMCA. But what AMLO is actually achieving is the opposite, beginning to make the North as poor as is the South. And so, as you pointed out, by trying to focus on national electricity production through CFE, it is pushing up electricity prices and making electricity dirtier and less reliable for all. By trying to make all oil production through Pemex, it is decreasing Mexican oil production, increasing oil-based corruption, and decreasing that source of national wealth. By trying to act against, or at least in irregular fashion, the regulation of foreign and other enterprises, it is causing many people to suspend plans for investing in new facilities. Indeed, it is actually causing what should be a real benefit for Mexico, the impulse to move to nearshoring, taking advantage of USMCA, as people see that the dangers of having distant supply chains with China. But given that this investment environment is so worrisome, is so investor unfriendly, talks about nationalization, a high energy cost, in many ways, AMLO is preventing Mexico from benefiting from the move to nearshoring by giving investors pause and at least causing them to hold off a little bit on moving their production into Mexico. So it really is a move in a very worrisome negative direction.
About nearshoring, The Economist again has a summary that seems like a condemnation. It says that the manufacturing is too backward for finished goods and that the location is too far away for component goods, suggesting, of course, there's nothing to be gained and we'll maintain our supply chains all across the Pacific to Southeast Asia or into the Indo-Pacific. Does Latin America as a group, as a collective, lots of business associations, do they talk about these problems? Was this talked about at the Summit of the Americas, this competition with Asia and you're losing?
John, Latin American business associations and governments are very good at talking, maybe less good at solving the problems. Mexico is arguably a little bit different than some of its neighbors to the south, such as Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, in that Mexico, for example, has a relatively competent auto sector, a relatively competent technology sector, even a biotech sector that has been fairly good in producing finished goods, as well as intermediate goods, which again are integrated into the U.S. market. When you look at Central America, especially with CAFTA-DR, that trade agreement. Central America, because of its lower sophistication, has focused more on producing intermediate goods, so cloth and things, textiles, again, largely oriented towards the U.S. market. Other parts of the Americas have focused more on commodities. And so even sophisticated Chile, focusing on copper, potassium nitrate, certainly Peru, as we've talked about, with copper and iron production. And even Brazil, as it's plugged into the China economy, has focused less on its traditional protected manufacturing and increasingly on the easier thing, which is the export of iron, the export of soybeans, the export now of petroleum. And so this question of why, with all of these factor endowments and why with these potentially educated workforces, does not more of the value added get realized in Latin America, more finished goods? So that does continue to be a matter of discussion, but unfortunately, discussion more than actual effective action, recognizing what some of the real problems are and doing something to solve them.
I'm speaking with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.